It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of The Real Deal, where we're going to go ahead and talk about Real Madrid versus Bayern. And Darnish, welcome to the show. If you had to quickly just say who's going through, you got like, without even going into the analysis, who's going through if I had to put the gun to your head?
Real Madrid.
Well, I'll go with Real Madrid as well. And
Real Madrid. Here we go. I guess because the away leg is at the Bernabeu.
All right, Real Madrid it is.
Silly answer, but that's... Well, we'll get into more justifications later on. That was a gun to my head answer.
Yep. Here we are, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, tomorrow, Allianz Arena, European Classic. I mean, this is obviously one of Europe's favorite, I think, ties for neutrals. For Real and Bayern, it depends on the year. It's not as fun. It's usually difficult. And I think this year it will be no different for both teams. It's going to be very difficult. Darnish, welcome to the show. You want to introduce yourself to us? First time on the show, and I've only met you recently.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. By the way, that is an awesome theme song for the podcast. This is a really cool theme song. The animation, the buses, I really like that. I was nodding my head in the back. But yeah, my name's Danish Iqbal. I'm a writer for Sky Sports. I'm a writer for FotMob. I write a weekly column for the Busby Babe about Manchester United, which is my club. And I'm quite frankly exhausted of writing about them this season. I produce tactical analysis threads on Twitter and basically collate them into articles and make them manageable and digestible for people to understand the what, whys, and the hows of the game. And I've done quite a few pieces on Real Madrid recently, which is very interesting to me.
Nice. Yeah, for sure. We're going to talk about Real Madrid. Real Madrid this season, I guess I'll just give a brief overview from what I can tell. Just very unpredictable in transition, a lot of rotations, a lot of coming to the ball in short spaces, but also making unpredictable off-ball runs, filling all the lanes when attacking. Changing system, having injuries, playing through injuries, you know, having Cruz, doing everything. And like now we're as healthy as we've been pretty much all season and going into this tie, wrapped up La Liga. You know, we've matched last season's point total with 7 games to go. So it's looking like amazing. It's looking amazing. So it's just been an amazing season with Bellingham, honestly. And with Rodrigo and Vinny in transition in big games, as we saw against Man City, really good. So we really back ourselves against any opponent. After City, you saw, like, I don't think any too much more about Real. We saw against City.
The both legs for me against Manchester City were very interesting because it felt as though City had gotten worse since last season and you guys had learnt quite a bit. I think last season, what you did for me that was erroneous and wrong, and Carlo Ancelotti didn't do this in both legs, is you pressed last season. You pressed for the first half at the Bernabeu, and it worked. But that was different at the Bernabeu, at home, against that big crowd. You know, the roof was caved in. That was the right thing to do. What you did against Manchester City at the Etihad was go to a mid-block completely. And I'm still completely baffled and shocked that you did it for that long. But it felt like the right thing to do at the time. It was interesting to me that Carlo Ancelotti said, we didn't want to play that way. We didn't intend to play that way. But the early goal got us there. As in the early goal sort of set the events in motion. In terms of the first leg, I think what has really stood out to me this season whilst watching you guys in the Champions League, particularly against City, is how well-disciplined the attackers are. Like, as in defensively, they're doing some really, really smart work, and it allowed you to execute game plans in both games very, very well. So you had Bellingham, Camavinga, Vinicius and Rodrigo being extremely narrow at the Etihad, like really, really narrow, which basically means that there was almost little or no space to punch the ball into Rodri in midfield or De Bruyne or Foden, which means that basically City had to play around you and go very wide. Now, City, they tend to play games in second gear and then they want to slowly up the gears, but it played into your hands that they just kept being in second gear and they couldn't find spaces in the middle. And I thought your forward line contributed very, very well to this. Going back to the game at the Bernabeu and the aggressive approach in terms of pressing, it meant that in the second half, City purposefully, I felt, slowed the game down a lot. This was an advantage to them, but mainly it was a disadvantage when they slowed the game down at the Etihad. Does that make sense?
Disadvantage them that they slowed the game down at the Etihad, City?
Yeah, so in the first half, in the second half, like when they slowed the game down, that was an advantage for them because, you know, in the atmosphere in Madrid and playing away, they needed to get a foot on the ball and they needed to get a hold of the game. It was a disadvantage that they played at the same pace at the Etihad because that was when they sort of needed to up the pace and up the ante, and they were chasing the game.
No, that makes complete sense. And they were ultimately afraid of playing like of our transition football in both legs, and I think correctly so.
Absolutely.
Because we ended up scoring three goals in the first half combined of both legs, and that really threw City off because then even when attacking, they couldn't afford to concede more goals. I think that's why City played so slowly. And I think it's correct because Vinicius, Rodrigo, Bellingham, even Brahim off the bench, they're so good, so dangerous. So you have to bring the game down to a standstill if you really want to like actually control the game against Real Madrid. And Pep always wants to control the game no matter where he goes. That's his goal. And he's become more defensive over the years. So it doesn't surprise me. But yes, they did need to turn it on more at the Etihad. They tried, and there were moments when they kind of got a couple good chances that didn't go their way. But they needed more of those really good chances, and they didn't get too many because they didn't overcommit to advanced areas. I agree. They didn't send the numbers they had.
You take your chances against City in those moments anyway. You sort of take your chances and go, well, there'll be one or two that that they're going to come up with. But largely, I think you handled them quite well. City liked to build up with the three at the back and two in midfield. But again, what you did was you squeezed them in the middle of the pitch. And again, it was the attackers that did this. But particularly, I want to have a focus on Toni Kroos because City with an advanced eight, so like a De Bruyne or a Foden or even a Kovacic, the point of what they're trying to do as an advanced eight is roam around the pitch on either side of the block. So they're roaming around to try and find pockets of space on the outsides, not on the wings, on the outsides, on the half spaces. Toni Kroos was really good at marking Phil Foden and making sure that he didn't pick up the ball in these spaces.
Yeah, yeah, he was. He was really good. That was one of the best defensive performances from a lot of our players. Like Nacho was phenomenal against Haaland. Carvajal was really solid, I thought, against Grealish overall. Like, gave up some stuff. It was really hard not to give up anything against Grealish, but overall he was solid. And then Mendy is Mendy. He's always solid. Same as Rudiger. Rudiger is Rudiger. He's always solid. But Camavinga, I thought, was really good. There was just those two small moments in the first leg, and those were when we were numerically defending with three. And when we're numerically defending with three in midfield and keeping our other three up and playing a more aggressive block, like trying to keep our high attackers up for transition, that was the risk, right? In the second leg, we mitigated that by just playing a much more flat midfield, like having one guy up, or sometimes everyone would come back and defend. Like, they would just do whatever was necessary to keep City out. Whereas in the first leg, they purposely kept
it. I'm still astonished that you were able to defend that deeply against City for that long, for basically the whole of the second half and the whole of the extra time. But it felt like there isn't a team in the world that could do that apart from Real Madrid. And then if you won that game, which you did, everyone comes out going, it's just Real Madrid. It's just Real Madrid in the Champions League. Because in the first half, at least, it was Vinicius, Rodrigo on the counter, and that sort of got nullified in the second half, less and less as you got deeper and deeper. You still basically limited their space a lot, but it was Akanji who would sort of break through the lines or grab the ball and take it forward 10 or 15 yards. But you would rather it be Akanji than anybody else who was threatening, if that makes sense. But
100%. 100%. That's what we saw Arsenal do really well as well.
Yeah, I think it's because as well he wanted De Bruyne to be further up the pitch, rather than be the guy collecting from deep, if that makes sense. There wasn't really enough movement from him or Bernardo, so I felt as though defensively you did extremely well without the ball against Man City, and then of course you have these ridiculously magical transitions where it's like, I think you might be the only team in the world where you can transition with two players and it's still somehow attacking, as in Vinicius will consistently take on two, three players and consistently dribble it 30 yards. Rodrigo will do the same. Then one player will go in the penalty area and they'll just find him. And that's how you scored at the Etihad. It's, I think you saw the Thomas Tuchel quote today. I'm going to mess up the quote, but I'll try to get it exactly as I can. But Real Madrid can score whilst having the ball, but you're not going to know the move 15 seconds before they have it. And that's exactly what has been the case this season with Real Madrid. And it's something that I picked up on against City and in the El Clasico, is how spontaneously a fullback pushes up forward. So like Carvajal or Lucas Vasquez against Barcelona, particularly pushing up was a real problem because then it created a 4v4 against their defense. Meanwhile, Kroos will drop in into defense, or Modric will drop in into the defense, and then another midfielder will go to the left wing, and it's all spontaneous as well. All spontaneous. It's different if you can see these teams and you see them rehearse these moves before, like Tottenham this season. You kind of know where Porro's going, you know where Udogi's going. With Real Madrid, it's a different rotation each time because you don't know which player is going to push up and push forward.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and that's what makes Real Madrid so dangerous. And our defending, of course, I think our defending is so good because Camavinga and Valverde are so rangy. And, you know, that brings us to the topic of Tuchel. Against Tuchel, yes. Camavinga and Valverde, like previous years we played Tuchel, we've struggled a couple times. Chelsea in 2021, they just...
It was a very, very fun tie. That was a very fun tie. It's interesting that I thought that one out of all the games was probably where you had a little slice of luck. I think that was a disallowed goal. I think you detest... you. Obviously, it's Real Madrid in the Champions League, and I don't want to take anybody off, but it's still... there was still a slice of luck, do you not think, to that campaign? Or I know there's a certain Real Madridness to it, but those comebacks?
I mean, there is a little bit of luck involved, no doubt. It's just it was also just like unbelievably, like Camavinga coming off the bench really helped a lot. There was an element of like us playing a very possession-based style, which would force opponents really high out to press us in the first half, then throwing on the Camavinga, the Rodrigo in the second half, and just completely just destroying them in terms of legs. Camavinga off the bench is just a complete menace in terms of physically, mentally, technically, in terms of how he's an athlete, in terms of how you have to defend him. It's really hard to guard him off the bench. Rodrigo off the bench too is really hard to defend. So I think there was that was a huge factor as well. I know the others were key, but those two were really, in my opinion, the most important bench pieces that we used in every comeback. But yeah, Chelsea, we often think was the hardest of the three. Yeah, like on top
they had your number. They definitely had your number at the Bernabeu.
Yeah, it was really hard, and it's because we didn't. It felt like we didn't have too long to complete the comeback. City too, we didn't, but I guess like we had a while to. I don't know. It felt like we didn't have too long against City too, and we needed two. But yeah, we somehow did it against Chelsea really soon and scored two. I mean, it was crazy. Modric's technique.
Both within the final 16 minutes. Did it go to extra time?
I don't think so. City went to extra time and we won in penalties. I think Chelsea we won in regular, I think. But either way, what are your thoughts on how Tuchel, I feel like he targeted Cruz really well, like just limited our successful buildup really well in those ties. The first leg of Chelsea, he obviously screwed up by having Reece like at right wing back or whatever, and he attacked successfully. But the second leg, Reece at right center back was really successful as well. And his blocks have always been really good. So what do you think of Tuchel and how he sets up?
I think he's still a very good, astute manager. I think tactically he's still one of the best. I think in cup matches especially, and he's got a very, very good record in the Champions League. Already got to a final with PSG, has already won it with Chelsea. As a coach out of possession, he's very, very good. I struggle sometimes with what he's doing in possession, but out of possession, he is capable of turning a team into a very tactically disciplined team, and particularly at nullifying them. It's going to be interesting to see because Bayern Munich is the first leg. It's going to be interesting to see how they come out and play, because for me, when I've seen them this season, the problems have tend to be when they have the onus on having the ball and they're too slow in build-up. There was that clip of Tuchel against Lazio sort of screaming at his players to go forward and go forward quicker. Thomas Müller has come out before and said, no, it's not down to the coach. We're doing all the right things in training. I just don't see it in the match. But it might actually play into your hands that the first leg's at the Allianz Arena, because they'll have to go for it rather than try stop you playing, if that makes sense. Also, if Bayern are the ones attacking, it'll play into your hands, I think, with Rodrigo and Vinicius. But in terms of Tuchel, I think Bayern Leverkusen's astonishing achievements this season has kind of overshadowed that he's still a very good coach, and he's still playing against the team that they haven't lost a match. Like, that happens extremely rarely. And he's still very much capable of setting up a team in a Champions League knockout game.
Yeah. How do you think he's going to set up? So how do you think he's going to set up as far as like selection? Do you think Mazraoui is going to start over Davies? You think back four? You think any chance there's a back three? Have they even played a back three this season? I haven't followed closely enough.
They tend to play in a back four, but as in with the ball, they tend to set up in a back three. So they'll set up with like three at the back, three playing at the back.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They do have a ton of injuries at the minute. But I believe it will be, I think, Eric Dier.
Yeah, Eric Dier plays over Kim. Why is he playing over Kim? What are your thoughts on that? That seems really dumb. Like, I respect Tuchel, but that seems really dumb.
I mean, it worked against Arsenal.
It worked against Lazio and Arsenal, but why? What, like, is the real question?
For in terms of Kim?
Yeah, why is he benched for Eric Dier?
Honestly, I haven't researched it enough, but it tends to be that he thinks that Dier is more of a solid option at the minute, or he can move Kimmich into midfield from right back. Do you know what I mean? So when they build up in a three, he can maybe alternate between Mazraoui, Dier, and De Ligt as a back three, and then push Kimmich into midfield, and then move either one of Lima or Goretzka up. That might be why. But
what does Dier offer that would change why you wouldn't play Kim in the middle?
I'm holding my hands up and saying I'm not really sure either.
Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense to me unless like it's some build-up reason, some build-up angle reason.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is pushing. No, but then you're right, because you can have Kim, De Ligt, Mazraoui, and Kimmich.
That's what I'm saying, in every situation. So it makes no sense to me. That's, I feel like, a big weakness there, just because I feel like Dier, I know it's worked against Arsenal. I don't know. It just feels like Dier is just not a Champions League level center back, in my opinion. Maybe he is serviceable enough as like a Champions League center back, I guess.
I think it could be down to fitness as well, and for Kim, because I think he played every single game without having a break. And then obviously when you don't play and another duo in De Ligt and Dier is working, the coach is just going to say, okay, well, I'll just stick with what's working now.
Interesting.
That could be one reason, because forgive me if I'm wrong here, but I think he might have been at the Asia Cup.
He was. And
in case I got it,
I believe he was. What are your thoughts on Bayern versus Arsenal?
I mean, I thought they limited them really, really well in the first half. The first leg, Arsenal probably didn't take their chances, but they never really convinced me in the Champions League, Arsenal. I always felt as though, even against Porto, the Europe and the Champions League is a completely different kettle of fish. Especially against, you could just see it against Porto away. But I think Porto, they won 36 fouls or something like that. Fouls that in the Premier League, they wouldn't have been fouls. But in the Champions League, they're given. They just, I think that team was just a little bit too fresh and early coming up against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, they were for sure. Bayern used their Champions League experience. You saw Neuer with all his Champions League experience. Kimmich scoring the header. It was just such
Arsenal also didn't really create much in the second leg at all, I felt.
No, they didn't.
I think one aspect that I picked up on, which was really, like, this goes to show how Tuchel's mind is to attention to detail. He said, I wanted to limit them in terms of set pieces. So he specifically set the team up and the game up to not concede set pieces against Arsenal, because they're ridiculously good with set pieces. And they have been all season.
Yeah. Definitely. It's very interesting looking at how Bayern have been playing with Harry Kane. Obviously, is really good. Musiala is good, but Coman getting injured. Leroy Sané has went a long time this season without scoring at points. What are your thoughts on
injuries this season? Yeah, they do have tons of injuries this season.
Yeah, all over the place. He said some of them, like I think Sané and Gnabry, are doubtful. I think he's just saying it also for mind games, one or two of them, but some of them are doubtful. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Bayern's setup, I guess, like their 4-2-3-1 or Tuchel? I guess, like, what do you think he's gonna play, like a mid block in the first leg, attempt to nullify Kroos?
I think it's gonna be dictated by injuries. Honestly, I think it's gonna be dictated by injuries, because Gnabry's injured, Sacha Boey's injured, De Ligt is injured, Sané's injured, Lima's injured, Koeman's injured. Upamecano's injured as well, so we might actually get to see Kim forced into the lineup we were talking earlier about why he's not playing Kim. I think he might be forced into the lineup.
I don't believe Dilip, Sané, and Gnabry are all injured. I believe those three. Bluffing? I think those three are the most likely bluffs. And out of those three, at least one or two are bluffs, in my opinion.
Hmm. Interesting.
I do think he's bluffing because, like, a lot of them just showed up out of nowhere. Like a couple of them, I could believe if it was just one. But all, like, Dilip, I could believe because I saw him limp a little. But even when I saw the look on his face, just something told me, like, nah, you're bullshitting. Like, just something told me you might have just, like, limped out of here for fun. but it's just feeling. I'm not sure. But if Kim starts, fine. I'm wrong. But something just tells me they're bullshitting. And same with Sané and Gnabry. They've been healthy. Like, they were healthy for Arsenal, I think, right? They've been healthy the last few games. So
yeah, it was 2 weeks ago. But if it's not, if it's not Sané and Gnabry, it'd be Thomas Muller and Guerrero on the wings, which is a completely different threat. Because then if you nullify them centrally and they go wide and it's Guerrero instead, they won't be as effective. Some of the problems that they've had this season when they've had the ball is getting it from sort of defence into attack smoothly from midfield. So neither one of the... When it's been Goretzka, Kimmich, I think it's been a little bit better. But when it's been Goretzka and Pavlovic, maybe because Pavlovic is a little bit new still, it doesn't feel as though it's smooth enough, or one of them doesn't go forward or travel with the ball. They don't punch the ball.
What about Lame or Goretzka?
Again, I think Lame is injured. It's so hard to actually pinpoint.
He might be a bluff too. I forgot. He's the fourth one who might be
a bluff. Everybody's a bluff. Maybe everyone's a bluff. No one's fit.
Bluffs. I just, you know, if you put a probability on it, one to two of them might be definitely a bluff. I don't know.
This is going to be an interesting lineup tomorrow. Because I think, like you said, you are the fittest you've been. I think it's only Carvajal who's suspended.
Suspended, yep. And Militao's back, but he probably won't start. We're probably going to start Nacho or Tchouameni. Maybe Tchouameni. I'm not sure. I don't know. Camavinga off the bench is just so good. So you might just want to play Nacho at center back and Tchouameni at CDM. But I think that's very likely. That's very possible. Otherwise, we play Tchouameni at center back and Camavinga, Cruz, Fede. But
it's worked previously. So
yeah. But
problem. I'm looking forward to seeing Alphonso Davies for
Bayern. Is he going to play? Because I feel like so I guess, yeah, let's talk about that. Because I feel like Mazraoui is going to play over him.
I'm just literally going off who I think is going to be fit. But I think the problem that you might have if they do it is going to be on the wings. Because I feel like Ancelotti is smart enough to set up like how Bayer Leverkusen did earlier this season when they were playing at home and they absolutely had Bayern Munich's number. Absolutely. They nullified them in the center of the pitch. They had no spaces in central areas. They had no spaces in half spaces. It was the three in the middle by Leverkusen's midfield and attack were narrow. And they squeezed Goretzka and Pavlovic's space. So they had no space. And whenever they moved left or right, they sort of shifted over, but not too much so the central pivots had space to play. So the space for Bayern Munich might be on the wings, Alphonso Davies pushing up or Mazraoui pushing up, going along to him and then sort of playing through that way and going 1v1 against the Real Madrid fullback. So that's where I think they might have a little bit of joy if Real Madrid set up the way we think they're going to set up, because I will be very surprised if they press, especially away from home. At home, maybe that can, depending on the game state and everything, I think Real Madrid should stick to pressing at home when they need to, but going back into the mid-block away, because it's effective, especially in the Champions League.
Yeah, we really don't press for 90 minutes ever. Like, that's not our style. Unless we're chasing, like, a game against a small team and we go down early, then we might just start pressing all the game because we're going to have the ball most of the game anyways. But those games are different. But against a big team, we usually don't press the whole game, that's for sure. What about, you said Guerrero's not good on the wing. Tell me more about that. I thought, because he got the assist against Arsenal, Some people say he's been like impressive for them. What do you think?
He has been impressed. Yeah, actually, no. Maybe you've caught me out there. He's better than what Tuchel has at his disposal now, which is an inconsistent and out of form Leroy Sané. As in he's sort of become the option to go to because Sané is just not at the races at the minute.
And Gnabry, really, more than that, even Sané, would you say? Sané plays on the right a decent amount. But yeah, he hasn't been great, but Tuchel seems to still just play him through it, as far as I can see. But Gnabry...
I think it's because they still need that option, like I said before, on the wings, or spaces on the wings, because it feels like a team, every time I've watched them this season, that can't break through centrally. So against Lazio... against Bayer Leverkusen, it was they really struggled to punch the ball through in the center. So what do? You have to get the ball wide and encourage your winger to take on 2-3 players, like Man City did actually against the Real Madrid in the second leg.
Yeah, Sané, Musiala. If Sané is healthy, I think they might go with Sané, Musiala.
Or it could be a bluff,
huh?
Or it could be a bluff.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going with the rhythm. I don't know if it's a bluff.
I mean, if Sané is healthy, then he starts. If not, I mean, then they're gonna have to play Müller, and Müller hasn't been great this season, from what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't suspect playing Müller. I think he'll start on paper on the wings, but as in he'll come inside a lot and he'll drift. He'll drop into midfield a lot, and he might give Musiala the same license as well, but more advanced, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm looking at their stats. Müller has 5 goals this season from like 5xG, but he has 7 assists.
I don't think he started much at all.
No, not at all. Musiala has got 10 goals from 8xG, and so that's rare. Two in the Champions League. So that's pretty good because Leroy Sané is underperforming. He's at 8 goals from 11xG. He has 11 assists, so I'll give it to him. He is creating. And then you go over to Coman, who's hurt anyways. He's only had 3 goals from 3xG, and he's been, wow, that's pretty bad, like, for Coman season.
I think it'll be one of those games where we might learn a lot just from the lineups coming out. So, I mean, you're saying apparently these are bluffs. Because you are an insider and you have all this information. I'm joking. I don't know if you do. But the space on the wings might actually dictate how well Bayern Munich do, especially crossing the ball into Harry Kane and having a winger to be able to sort of take a man on and do that, or a fullback, Mazraoui or Davis, you know, whoever's fit to do that. So it's going to be an interesting team sheet that comes out, I think.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. Harry Kane obviously is a big threat. He has 35 goals in the Bundesliga from 29.5xG, 8 goals from 6, 7 goals from 5.5xG, 3 assists in the Champions League as well. But yes, Rudiger is there against him. What are your thoughts on that matchup? I mean, Rudiger is just like a god at staying with players, but Kane is going to drop so deep, and that's where Tchouaméni in midfield, I wonder if it's an advantage to keep him there, because he's going to be able to follow Kane, or no, he's going to be good at communicating. Like, he's a natural CDM. He's a natural, like, organizer of the line right before the defense. And Kane is going to drop into that line a lot. And so he'll be able to communicate well. If you play Camavinga there, he's still really good. But I feel like Tchouaméni is a slightly better 6, and we kind of saw glimpses of that in the City first leg when City scored those 2 long shots. If Tchouaméni was there, we may not have conceded those, just because he's like Casemiro, you know.
They were 2 brilliant long shots though as well. It's hard for me to say if those 2 long shots would have been stopped if a CDM was there, because they were ridiculously good, both from 40 yards.
No, they were. It's just like sometimes if you watch Casemiro or even Tchouaméni, they're just... Camavinga is not a 6. He's an 8.
Casemiro in his prime, by the way. Casemiro in his prime. We're not talking about current Casemiro. I've seen a lot of Casemiro play this season. I've seen enough.
Oh, I believe it. That's crazy to hear. But that's I mean, he was never going to be great in an environment where you didn't have like elite ball players around him, in my opinion, and your team isn't some elite ball playing team top to bottom, which is what you need outside Casemiro, because he's such a liability in possession and out of possession. You know, if you make him defend too much, I mean, yeah, in his prime, like if you remember the final against Liverpool and all those times, the amount of times he would snuff out an attack with like a late intervention.
Absolutely, yeah.
A late but high velocity moving intervention.
We were enamored with Casemiro last season. We couldn't believe we had signed Galactico Casemiro. Little did we know it was only going to be. It was, but I think it's mainly because he's not fit. He just doesn't look fit. And everybody in the Manchester United team is either not fit, but is rushed into playing games, or is injured and then has to quickly come back into a team where other players are injured and the sink is out. And so let's see if Casemiro gets better next season.
Yeah, I mean, he's still got an FA Cup final. I'm sure he's gearing up for that right now already. Just because he's a big fan of the big games. But Guerrero on the it looks like he's likely to start along with Mazraoui, so they're gonna have a lot of defending on that side, and yeah, I guess not as much attacking with Guerrero.
I am thinking about when we mentioned Harry Kane dropping deep, the point of that would be for him to drop deep and then have Muller or Musiala or Guerrero, who's ever playing up front, sort of play off him. When he's dropping deep, I want to see whether it's Rudiger that follows him or it's two or three players. Because if there's certain occasions where it's two or three players and they don't steal the ball off of him, then it can be a big problem.
No, well, that's where I think it's Tchouameni or whoever's playing CDM is going to be key. And we've probably been preparing for that. I think the CDM is going to pick him up because I think we've learned our lesson there, because in 2011, that if you remember, a certain Lionel Messi, was it 2011 or even 2010? I think the 5-0 was when he played false nine, and just whenever he played false nine first and just demolished us tactically, just our players followed him up. They didn't know what to do, and we were just food. I think that was the first time really that we had no idea what to do. And so it was either that. I don't think it was the 6-2 in against Pellegrini. I don't think it was that one. I think it was, but either way, but yeah, either way, it was I think, because numerically it just doesn't make sense to follow him with multiple players. I think you got to just take swap him out, like Rudiger follows him to a certain point,
just one,
and then yeah swap over to Tchouameni.
It's going to be interesting to see you away, because I don't feel like, whilst it was a heroic defending against Man City away, it was largely under pressure for a long amount of time. And then against Leipzig as well, it wasn't the most convincing performance. So let's see what happens tomorrow. I do feel like you'll nick at least one with your counterattacks. They go up, build up, it doesn't work well, the attack breaks down, and you get Vinicius, Rodrigo on the counter. It's just how you're going to manage the rest of the game, really.
Yeah, yeah. You think Carlo will be able to set up where we successfully, if both teams set up in a mid block, what happens?
I fully suspect Real Madrid to set up like they did against Man City away, just as like in the first half, not the second half. So the first half is in, when we have the ball, we're going to have a foot on the ball and we're going to have possession, and we're going to be in the game with the ball. It's not going to be, we're not going to defend that deep. We're going to squeeze the middle of the pitch. We're going to surround Goretzka and Pavlovic. I fully suspect that that's what's going to happen. In terms of what Tuchel has in store for your counterattacks, that is going to be really interesting, because it tends to be that they've struggled because the in possession stuff has been too slow, not because the in possession stuff is particularly bad.
Interesting. Yeah, we will see what he has for us in transition. I'm really fascinated. Maybe that's why they don't play the back three from what I'm seeing with all their lineups. And out of possession when they build up in that back three, they may have a three. Yeah, I'm really curious to see. Maybe that three is what they need. Maybe it turns into a five and they have Guerrero run back and they have the other winger run back. Flatten it out. That could be the case in transition, especially.
He's already spoken about your rotations, which makes me think he knows that it's very unpredictable to defend against.
Yeah, because we're just looking at the other team and just deciding randomly where we want to move, so we can get closer to the ball. And
rotation is spontaneous.
Yeah, and all three of our attackers, they all swap spontaneously as well. Yeah, it's going to be really difficult, and I'm excited to see what happens. But yeah, that's it. We can wrap it up here. Any final thoughts?
No, thank you for having me on the podcast. You can follow me online, Danish, my name, how it's written, _IQBAL. I'll probably be making an analysis on this game.
Yep. And yeah, what's your prediction for the score for the game? I'm going to go with, I'm going to go with 2-1 Real Madrid. I'm going to say some black magic works for us. And it's going to be like 1-1 close. And then we get some bullshit goal. Just some crazy
goal. I can see you going through on the two legs, but I can see 1-0 Bayern tomorrow.
Oh, really? Yeah, Bayern.
I can see Bayern 1-0 tomorrow for some reason.
Interesting.
Just all right, it's the whole Leipzig game away and the City game away. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I think we underestimated Leipzig away for what it's worth, and City
probably.
City away was just like it's City at the Etihad. They're difficult. Yeah. I think Bayern and Munich are far less difficult proposition. Not that they're not a difficult team, but yeah, we'll see. Are they stronger at home this year?
Bayern Munich.
Yeah, by a lot. Is there a big difference?
So in the league, but I think they've been lucky in the fact that the second leg against Lazio and Arsenal was at the Allianz Arena. This time it's going to be the Bernabeu, the second leg.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what Tuchel has in store because he has to try and win this leg. But yeah, thanks for coming on. I'm excited for tomorrow. Yeah. And excited for tomorrow. Well, excited, everyone. Looking forward to enjoying the leg and hopefully Real Madrid win.
Sports Social Podcast Network.